I'm Marty Moscowen. Welcome to Radio Times. Yesterday, Pennsylvania Governor Tom Corbett delivered his fourth budget address as his campaign for re-election gears up. Corbett said the Commonwealth is stronger today than when he took office, and the big news was more money for public schools in his $29.4 billion budget proposal. He also called for fewer business taxes. What's not clear is how Corbett proposes to pay for the increased spending, reduced pension payments for public employees, savings from Medicaid, more gas drilling in state-owned parks and forests, more revenue from gambling. We get reaction and analysis and a preview of the upcoming race for governor in this hour of Radio Times. Seven Democrats are vying to challenge Corbett, whose low poll numbers make him vulnerable. This is the John and John Show, as we call it. John Micek, editor of the editorial and opinion pages for the Patriot News and Penn Live. And John Micek, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Good morning, Marty. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
Not too bad. A little snowed and iced in, but otherwise okay.
Ditto. John Baer is political columnist for the Philadelphia Daily News. His blog, Baer Growls, can be found at philly.com. And John Baer, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you, Marty.
Hey, a good phone line for John Baer. We're really happy today.
The brave new year.
Hopefully Santa brought you that new phone. John, in your piece today in the Daily News, you said that the governor delivered a peace pipe yesterday. Tell us what you mean.
Well, I mean, if you look at the areas that polling tells us that the governor has problems in, they are, taking flak for education cuts. So we now offer several hundred million dollars in new education funding. He has problems with women, polls tell us, and so there are a lot of goodies in there having to do with pre-K education, having to do with more funding for child care, more funding for domestic and sexual violence programs. So it's sort of putting out a hand to women. And, you know, the worst rap he gets is for giving away our natural resources to gas drillers that provide him with campaign contributions. So there's a big bump in spending for statewide parks and forests. So it's like you go down the checklist of problem areas politically, and somehow they seem to match up with new funding and policy.
So the campaign has begun.
Absolutely.
John Micek, let me turn to you because a former speechwriter for President George W. Bush had a hand in writing the governor's speech. Was it a different sounding speech to your ears?
Frankly, no, it wasn't. And I teasingly said to an administration official that they might want to consider asking John McConnell for a refund on this one, because if it were great rhetorical flourishes and sort of compelling election scene setting they were looking for, it sort of came up short to that end. I mean, it was a classic speech given by an incumbent governor about to embark on a difficult re-election campaign, as John just mentioned a moment ago. I mean, there's a little bit of something in there for everyone. About the only difference, though, was from past speeches was the degree to which the governor sprinkled the audience with, I hate to say props, but frankly, props. We had
props.
A couple of Apache helicopter pilots in there, some school kids, constituencies that his budget would help. It's sort of a standard speech trope and beyond the cliche now, but that was about the only pivot from past practice. I mean, the thing that's fascinating for me here is the degree to which this is a pivot away from the austerity of the last 3 years. Of minimal spending increases to a 3.3% spending increase. And we can talk a bit about how the budget achieves that
sure
later on, but those are sort of my initial thoughts.
And I do want to do that. John Baer, let me go back to you because the governor took some credit for weathering the financial storms over the last couple of years. Deserved, undeserved on his part?
Well, I mean, deserved in the sense that he did exactly what he said he would do as a candidate, which is to provide less government and not to raise your taxes in his first 3 years. So, I mean, look, for an awful lot of people in this vast and largely rural state, that's a very popular place to be. But the problem is when you get down into comparing Pennsylvania with other states, which you will never hear the governor do, because we don't fare well. The National Association of State Budget Officers, people who actually know and understand the nuances of state budgeting, reported, or they project, that virtually every state will have sizable surpluses in 2014, and Pennsylvania is not among them. Hmm. When I asked the budget secretary, Charles Zogby, why that is, how did Pennsylvania miss that boat, his only answer was, well, we had a big hole to start in. We just couldn't get out of it, which is essentially blaming Ed Rendell, which 3 years plus in just doesn't seem to float as well. The real answer, of course, is that many of the other states, including those governed by conservative Republicans, accepted federal Medicaid money, which is huge, and they also have taxes, which we don't. Mm. So other states have been able to weather this a lot better than we have, and virtually every study on job creation, good states for business, has us in the lower third, lower fourth, lower fifth. So for many people in Pennsylvania, things are fine. But for the state as a whole, it's tough to make a sale that, you know, we're doing very, very well.
John, let me quote John Micek. Let me quote something from Governor Corbett's speech yesterday. He says here, we addressed our state's fiscal problems by eliminating the deficit. Is the deficit eliminated?
If they're talking about the $1.4 billion one that they projected, and they're now calling a planning deficit, which I think is just fabulous. I didn't know such things actually existed. You could plan to have a deficit and then make it magically go away. The budget relies on for its funding rosy expectations about the amount of revenue growth, 4% from the current 2%. Federal approval of the Medicaid waivers the administration is seeking, legislative approval for pension reform and a host of other programs, and some one-time fixes, including a transfer from the state's tobacco settlement fund over to the state pension board, precisely the kind of one-time fix that Governor Corbett once criticized former Governor Rendell for undertaking. There are some sort of some shaky underpinnings to the financial assumptions in this budget. And when you asked Republicans yesterday whether or not they thought the budget was sustainable and whether or not they thought it was sound, you got awkward silences and something along the lines of, yeah, we're going to have to take a closer look at that, which did not augur well for Secretary Zogby's appearance before the Senate Appropriations Committee next Monday. I expect he'll have some very difficult questions to answer.
John Baer, let me go back to you, and I'm picking up on the Medicaid question. The governor's program, Healthy Pennsylvania, I guess still has to be signed off by the federal government, and I'm not sure where that stands today.
Well, it stands where so much stands in front of the federal government, which is in limbo. And even if the feds go along with the governor's program, Healthy PA, which includes a work requirement, which no other state has ever had approved, even if they go along, the program would not take effect until next January. So Democrats have an argument in that for another full year, maybe 500,000 uninsured Pennsylvanians who do not now have health coverage won't have it under the governor's plan. It's a very controversial issue, and one that Democrats have been hammering and hammering and will continue to throughout the year in budget process and also in the campaign against Corbett.
And it ties employment to being a Medicaid recipient, yes?
Right. You've got to be, at least be looking for a job, which a lot of people think is a little bit harsh, because if you don't have health insurance, you might already be sick. It just seems a little heavy-handed. I know that it's very popular among conservative Republicans. Everybody argues, why don't they get a job? And so now the governor is kind of joining in on that argument with his Healthy PA plan. Although, Marty, I will say that from a raw political standpoint, the tactic here is interesting, because the budget basically says, look, do it this way. It's on you now. I've offered more for almost everybody and a balanced budget. You guys are up for re-election, too. You want to make the cuts. You go ahead and face your own electorate. And if this works, I get through the year without having to deal with pensions, without having to deal with Medicaid, without having to deal with state stores. And, you know, if I'm wrong and there's a huge deficit, if I win, I've got 3-4 years to fix it without having to face re-election. If I lose, it's the next guy's problem.
John Micek, let me ask you about what the governor talked about yesterday, increased funding for public schools in Pennsylvania, but it's in the form of largely in the form of block grants. This is getting into some of the weeds, but these are very important weeds. And, of course, the whole issue of public education has been such a hot and controversial issue over the last couple of years.
Yeah, for the first year, I think, Marty, the administration is not actually touching the basic education subsidy, which is the largest tranche of state funding that goes directly to the districts. Instead, they're focusing on this new expansion block grant program that just, you know, they send a chunk of money to the districts that they can use as they see fit for tutoring programs and that kind of stuff. It builds on the already existing accountability block grants that were sort of coaxed, that began under former Governor Ed Rendell and were rescued from oblivion by House Speaker Sam Smith. The governor, in fact, zeroed those out in his initial budget, but Republicans in the House successfully brought them back at a diminished rate of funding, about $100 million. So the governor calls for about $240 million in these new block grants in his budget proposal. It's a very popular way of doing things in Republican circles. They argue that it gives districts broader flexibility to spend the money as they see fit. But Democrats are already pointing out that there's not an increase in the basic education subsidy, which is the largest chunk of state funding. The governor is getting some credit for increasing funding for special education, which actually hasn't been touched for several years. And the formula is now being done in accordance with the Special Education Funding Commission that was brought to life last year, where it's based upon the actual number of the actual number and needs of the special education students in your district, rather than some, you know, an expectation that every district will have X percent of special ed kids in their district, whether they have them or not.
Well, and John Baer, we're about a minute before our first break here, and as you know, we have covered this a lot in Philadelphia, the crisis of funding in the public school system here. But I'm assuming it's being felt across the state in districts large and small and rural districts that probably don't get the kind of attention that urban districts get.
That's true. It's being felt nowhere as harshly as in Philadelphia. But When other districts look at Philadelphia, I mean, John mentioned the basic education funding. Philadelphia already gets over $1 billion in state funding, and it's going to get another $29 million because of the governor's increase. So for most districts, that's just a horrifying amount of money. And the other thing, Marty, is that the vast majority of school districts in Pennsylvania have what's called reserve accounts that total over $3 billion. Philadelphia, of course, is in the hole for, I don't know, $300-400 million,
something like that.
But, you know, most of the school districts in Pennsylvania have reserve funds that they can use if they choose. They say they're saving it to deal with pension costs or to deal with capital construction costs and things like that. So, yes, other districts suffer. Nobody suffers the way Philadelphia does.
And that's John Baer, Philadelphia Daily News political columnist. Also with us, John Micek, editor of the editorial and opinion pages for the Patriot News and for Penn Live. We call them up a couple of times a year to talk about Pennsylvania politics in this hour of Radio Times, talking about Governor Corbett's budget address yesterday. We'll be talking about the upcoming race for governor as well, and we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Yes, it's terrible outside. Give us a call. We'll be right back.
The Philadelphia Orchestra supports WHYY as part of the Strauss 150th anniversary year. Legendary pianist Emmanuel Axe joins the Philadelphia Orchestra to perform the youthful Burlesque, plus the first piano concerto of Johann Sebastian Bach. And Vladimir Yurovsky conducts Bach's second suite. Tickets online at philorg.org or at 215-893-1999. This Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at the Kimmel Center, Emmanuel Axe, Vladimir Yurovsky, and the Philadelphia Orchestra.
I'm Marty Moscowane. It's another icy, cold, and frustrating day in the Delaware Valley. Don't let the bad weather problems prevent you from becoming a supporter of WHYY. Our membership drive continues because, like you, we have bills to pay, and the way we pay for them is through listener support from people just like you. We're here for you. Now, please be here for us. Here's that phone number. It's 1-888-345-9499. Make a pledge of support, 1-888-345-WHYY, and And you can also pledge online at WHYY.org. If you're a member of WHYY, we thank you for doing your part and for listening during this drive. Your contribution is the lifeblood of the station and what we do. If you've never been a supporter, you're new to the area or new to public media, take the next step and become a member. Pick up the phone and make a call. 1-888-345-9499. Pledge online at WHYY.org. Thanks very much. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscone, talking with John Baer and John Micek about Pennsylvania politics, again about Governor Corbett's budget address yesterday. We're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, or send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Any questions or comments? John Micek, I'm giving you some heavy lifting here. The governor talked about pension, and pension reform has been very much, I guess, both in the news and out of the news as well. Nonetheless, Pennsylvania, like a lot of states, has a huge liability, almost $50 billion. Do I have that right?
That sounds right. It's about 47, nearly 50 billion. That's right.
And how did the Commonwealth get in these straits?
Well, Marty, long ago when the earth cooled, It's a long and tangled story that involves, in part, under the state not making the contributions to the pension fund when it should have. A famed pension grab in 2001, when benefits were increased for teachers, state lawmakers, and other public employees, and the cratering of the economy in 2008, when the state lost, like everybody else did, a chunk of its investments.
Right.
So as a consequence, we now find ourselves with a $47 billion unfunded liability in the budget, in the pension fund, which is the amount that the state owes toward retirees, as opposed to the amount that it actually has on hand, and then its pension contributions are set to increase as well from $1.6 billion to about $4 billion. Bear can maybe backstop me on this, because it gets maddeningly complex. So the governor, in short, you get into actuarial stuff here, but he's looking to bring a savings of about $170 million from pension reform in his current budget proposal. And it gets there through tightening what's known as the collar on pension benefits, and I confess to not fully understanding what all of that means, and I'm trying to unlock it. But what he's basically getting is some near term relief in exchange for a long term fix, as my colleague Charlie Thompson wrote this morning. And, I mean, the governor does have a point, though. Not doing something is far more expensive than doing something, because pension costs are going to eat up something like 50 cents or 60 cents on the dollar if they remain unaddressed. So it's a huge and intractable problem.
John Baer, you want to add to that?
Well,
it's a complicated one. I understand.
Yeah, I started to nod off a little bit. It's not Micek's fault. It's this issue. It creates headaches for anybody who even looks at it. But the thing that made me laugh yesterday was, in talking about the cure, the administration claims that it's no longer kicking the can down the road. Well, that's exactly what it's doing. I mean, when Micek talks about collars, what that is the percentage of contributions that the state makes to the pension funds. So how they're going to achieve the savings this year and help make that mystery deficit disappear is by lowering the collar, lowering the percentage of their contributions to the pension funds. Now, what that does, obviously, in the long run, is increase your liability. So while you say you're doing this to get savings, what you're doing is kicking the can down the road.
Well, I mean, it's easy to nod off with all this stuff, but it also seems like this is a what sounds like a pretty untenable situation.
Yeah, look,
John Baer.
It's an intractable problem. It's a very, very difficult problem, and we're not alone in this.
Right.
I mean, every big state has difficulty with this, and a lot of local municipalities and school districts do, too. It's just one of those things that has spun out of control ultimately somebody's going to have to fix it. And the fix that is, I think, most likely, Marty and John, is this hybrid approach of having a certain amount of new employee salary still protected under the defined benefit plan that everybody in government has until you reach a certain level of income, and then the next portion of income goes to the 401k type approach.
So
you don't cause a lot of harm to anybody, and you very slowly start to tick away at the problem.
John Micek, let me go back to you. This gets to the state-owned liquor stores. The governor said yesterday, 2014, last call for state liquor control in Pennsylvania. I have talked with you and John Baer and other people for, I think, decades now about the state store system in Pennsylvania. 2014, last call, John Micek?
Yeah, sure. Why not? If it could be done, Marty, I think it'd probably be done by now. We were actually trying to drill down on this yesterday with Charles Zogby during the budget briefing. If this meant, in fact, actual privatization, where the state would get out of the retail and wholesale business of alcohol over a period of years, or if it meant modernization, which means the state, you know, the Pennsylvania Liquor Control Board would function more like a consumer-friendly business, which is the goal of those in organized labor and frankly the goal of those some in the Republican-controlled state Senate. The governor brought up the example of Utah in his speech, which is the only other state with complete control, as Pennsylvania has, over the sale of wine and spirits, which appears to suggest that he's looking for full private retail and wholesale privatization. Yeah. That, as we've talked about, you know, a gazillion times before, is incredibly difficult and incredibly elusive. What I suspect we'll get at the end of this being Pennsylvania, is some incremental changes around the edges that look more like modernization than actually full privatization.
Is that because
you'll note that he did not include any revenue from privatization in his budget, which tells you all you need to know about what he thinks about his chances.
That's interesting. I mean, John Baer, is this because the unions have been pushing back on this issue as much as other people have been talking about changing the liquor control system in Pennsylvania?
Well, yes, sure, Marty. That's a big part of it. And the other part of it is, look, it's not exactly a pressing issue. I mean, if you poll people on this directly, they will say, yeah, we'd like to see the system changed. If you ask people what their priorities are for Pennsylvania, it just never shows up. I mean, people are more concerned with jobs, the economy, health care, employment, the state store system is antiquated. It's out of date. It's you know, rare and unique in the land of the free. But I think there is some salvation here for those who want to see some change, and that is, if the governor shows any signs of life in the polls, and we get to like April, May, and it appears that he has a decent shot at reelection, I think there'll be an enormous amount of political pressure put on the legislature to do anything. And if they did anything, if they allowed wine to be sold in grocery stores, one thing, that could be a huge political advantage, because the governor could rightly claim he's the first governor in the history of the state to make any changes in the state store system. So there is that little bit of window, but I think it's going to have to depend on where he is when we get to May, June.
And where do his polls stand today, John Baer?
They don't stand. They are laying down flat and offering up the ghost. They are the worst polling numbers of any incumbent governor in our state. 23% of people think he deserves reelection, and 62% of people think the state is headed in the wrong direction. It will be a remarkable comeback if he is able to cobble together a victory.
And this is across the board, I mean, kind of a bipartisan response to this governor?
Well, obviously, Republicans are a little bit better. I think they're in the 30s or something like that, 38 maybe. But yeah, it has not been going well. His salvation, of course, lies in the Democratic Party, which is completely capable, as we know from history, of screwing things up. So we'll just see what happens in the next few months.
And I do want to talk about that. But to you, John Micek, do you think, is it policy? Is it personality? Why the governor having such low popularity in Pennsylvania?
It is one of the stranger things, I think, in Pennsylvania politics that Tom Corbett is polling as low as he is. It's just, I mean, the numbers are, as John says, are just unprecedented. And it's weird, because if you talk to Corbett one-on-one, he's actually a personable, decent, hardworking kind of guy. The problem is that his narrative was taken away from him early in his administration through poor message delivery and the way he was framed by the way he's viewed and the way he's framed by the majority of majority of Pennsylvania voters was by the opposition. Mm-hmm. He was lumped in very early on with firebrand Republican governors like Scott Walker in Wisconsin or Jan Brewer in Arizona or Rick Scott in Florida. And in a lot of ways, I mean, he does share their small government philosophy, but is not sort of as radioactive personally as some of those governors are. But because he wasn't able to get out in front and seize his narrative away, and because he came in right away and made a ton of cuts, most notably to public schools and public welfare programs, I mean, that defined who he was in the eyes of a lot of voters. Now, the administration will tell you that they made those cuts because Big Bad Ed Rendell handed them a $4.2 billion deficit, and they needed to right the ship of state to get things back on track. That hit his numbers early on, and they've stayed there ever since. There have been multiple attempts to try to reshape the governor's narrative, but so far they just have not taken.
And that's John Micek, editor of the editorial and opinion pages for the Patriot News and Penn Live. Also with us, John Baer. He's the political columnist for the Philadelphia Daily News. His blog is Baer Growls and can be found at philly.com. And we often call them up to talk about Pennsylvania politics. They know a lot about this state, and we take calls at 1-888-477-9499. It is possible to talk about something besides the weather today. I just want you to know that. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, or send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. John Baer, let me pick up on what you said about the Democrats. You said they're fully capable as a party, I guess, and perhaps even as some of these candidates, of what, shooting themselves in the foot?
Yeah, I mean, it's called the circular firing squad. You still have four, maybe five viable candidates running in the May 20th primary to get the party nomination to oppose the governor in the fall. And they have money. They've raised an awful lot of money. And they all sort of agree on big policy questions. So they're going to have to differentiate themselves. And the way you do that is to tear down the other person.
Mm-hmm.
And so whoever emerges from this firing squad is going to be empty of cash and maybe full of holes. And so they may have to start rebuilding. And of course, that's what the Team Corbett is counting on, praying for, and hoping that that's the case. We'll see. Elections are funny things. They often, a window opens and somebody goes through and all of a sudden you have a clear front runner. It's impossible at this point. Anybody that tells you that they know what's going to happen in that primary just doesn't know what they're talking about. Too many moving parts.
To you, John Micek, and just picking up on what John Baer just said, Alison Schwartz has been described as the front runner. Sometimes that's a good thing. Sometimes it's not so much of a good thing to be a front runner a couple of months before an election. But do you see her that way?
I mean, she polls that way, and that is what these very early polls of Democratic voters will tell you. But that's at like 24%. She's the front runner. I mean, there's still vast tracts of the electorate who have no idea who any of these people are. I mean, Alison Schwartz may be well known in Cheltenham, but in Crawford County, they have no idea who the heck she is. And that's true of all of these candidates. These top four or five who are still in the race. They have tremendous ground to make up. That's why you see a guy like State Treasurer Rob McCord, for instance, spending a lot of time out in western Pennsylvania, introducing himself around and explaining who he is. The governor, just by virtue of being the governor, starts, three or four places ahead in terms of name recognition and fundraising and everything else. And it's going to be certain that he will have as much money as he needs to mount this reelection campaign. And if one of these Democratic candidates comes out, as John says, damaged and broke, that's a whole lot of, or not broke, but, depleted, that's a whole lot of ground that they're going to have to make up.
John Baer, in Pennsylvania, you can give unlimited amounts of money to candidates, correct?
Yes. We are one of only a handful of states that virtually have no campaign finance laws. it's the Wild West when it comes to funding candidates, and so people who are connected and people who have friends in high places usually do pretty well in that category. And look, one of the things that is detrimental to democracy is that in a state like Pennsylvania, it doesn't matter how smart you are, how many good ideas you have, how appealing you are, how good of a person you are, if you don't raise a ton of money, you're not going to get into public office at the statewide level. It's not right. But it's the way it is.
There are seven candidates. We mentioned Allison Schwartz, Rob McCord as well, John Hanger, Catherine McGinty, Tom Wolf, Max Myers, Joellen Litz. I have forgotten a couple of them. The top ones, I guess, at this point, Schwartz, McCord, Hanger, McGinty, and Wolf, are they the ones to, I guess, keep an eye on so far, John Baer?
Yes. You hit it all on the head. Schwartz, McGinty, Wolf, McCord, Hanger. For different reasons, and you can make a case for each one of them, really, with the possible exception of John Hanger, only because he has the least amount of money. Terrifically smart guy, full of progressive ideas, and because of the money, he's just not. He is at it every day. He constantly. I've seen nobody in the race produce more comments, produce more ideas, produce more policy than John Hanger, but again, because of the way our campaign finance laws don't exist, it's hard to get his message out there and get him across.
Well, in fact, he was part of a forum here at WHYY and talked about legalizing pot in Pennsylvania and using that to build the economy and I guess to get taxes as well. John Micek, is that going to happen in our lifetime?
Full on legalization, no. At least as long as Governor Corbett is in charge, and he's vowed to veto that bill. He's vowed to veto any medical marijuana bill that comes to his desk. So that said, if we have a different governor after November, maybe the playing field changes. But we still have a Republican-controlled General Assembly, which is another major impediment. But I mean, that is the issue that Mr. Hanger is using to differentiate himself. He has billboards up in Scranton and in Erie. Calling for legalization, and that's the challenge that John Baer highlighted a minute or two ago. I mean, all of these candidates are progressive. They're all capital D Democrats, and it's difficult to get a few saran wrap between them on matters of policy. So Mr. Hanger is breaking away, capitalizing on what's a popular issue right now, polls well, marijuana legalization, hoping in some way that will help him break from the pack. That issue is unlikely to be determinative in a general election. It's always going to be school, jobs, the economy, healthcare, that kind of thing. But to the extent that it gives him an identity away from the rest of the pack, it is something.
Well, and we're almost up in a break here, John Baer, but one wonders if states that have legalized marijuana or medical marijuana start making a lot of money, I would assume other states that haven't done that are going to start paying attention.
Sure. It's one of those issues, Marty, you rightly point out, that a lot of people are going to be watching in Colorado and Washington State to see how they do with addiction, how they do with drug problems, more importantly, how they do with income. If it does turn out to be a huge revenue generator, which it certainly appears it's going to be, people might start to turn around on that issue. But I agree with Micek. I mean, not in our lifetime, not legalized marijuana in Pennsylvania.
We're talking with two Johns in this hour of Radio Times. I had to say that. I always say that. A Micek and a Baer. John Micek and John Baer. We're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Talking about Pennsylvania politics, the governor's budget address yesterday, and the upcoming race for governor as well. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Is your child struggling in school? Supporting WHYY, Delaware Valley Friends, a Quaker College preparatory school in Paoli for students who learn differently. Delaware Valley Friends is committed to providing small classes, individual attention, state-of-the-art technology, and an accredited curriculum and faculty for grades 6 through 12. Open house on Sunday, February 9th from 1 to 3 p.m. More info about Delaware Valley Friends at dvfs.org. OSTC scholarships and financial aid available.
I'm Marty Moscoane. We're in the middle of the winter membership campaign here at WHYY, and we're in the middle of some challenging winter weather, which is making it hard for all of us to get around, to get to work, and figure out what to do with the kids who are home from school once again. We're here for you with the kind of news and information that you rely on to keep you informed, no matter what the weather is. On Radio Times today, we're discussing Pennsylvania Governor Tom Corbett's budget address yesterday and the upcoming governor's race. Then a discussion about a new film called Kids for Cash, about a scandal involving two Pennsylvania judges who are in prison. The documentary and our discussion is about how these judges were found out. That's why you listen to Radio Times. We have the time to go deep and go long, to get beyond the headlines and the sound bites. What's that worth to you? $5, $10, $20 a month? You decide and make this phone call. It's 1-888-345-9499. You can also pledge online at whyy.org. Thanks. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane, talking with John Misek, editor of the editorial and opinion pages for the Patriot News and Penn Live. Also, John Baer, political columnist for the Philadelphia Daily News. His blog, Baer Growls, can be found at philly.com. Wrote a book a couple of years ago called On the Front Lines of Pennsylvania Politics, 25 Years of Keystone of a Keystone Reporter. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Again, send us an email, any questions or comments, radiotimes at whyy.org. And you can also send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Let me get another John to join us. John from Bucks County. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi.
Hi there.
I just had a quick question. You were talking a lot about gubernatorial races, and I was just wondering if there are any state house races to really keep a close eye on in the primary.
And are you looking for one in Bucks County, John?
No, just in general.
To see if there are any statewide races that our guests are looking at. John Misek, is there one or are there one or two that grab your eye?
Oh, gosh. It's very early days now. I've not really checked in on the House races. I mean, but you know, the broader issue of whether or not Democrats will be able to eat away at the Republican majority is going to be, you know, one that's going to be worth watching as these legislative races heat up. I mean, we've had some retirement announcements in the state Senate, some notable Republican seats, in fact, like Ted Erickson down in Delaware County. Mike Waugh was the one who just retired up here in York County. So Democrats gained a little bit of ground in the Senate last cycle, and with half of the Senate up this time, they might try to increase their margin there. The Democrats have a broader margin to overcome in the state house, but as is often the case, it's always in these sort of marginal seats in the Philadelphia suburbs, Delaware and Chester County, where strange things can happen and seats can flip. So you'll look for, you know, as is always the case, that you'll look for a lot of competitive races down in that neck of the woods. But in terms of actual races that I can identify as I sit here right now without a map in front of me, none rush immediately to mind.
Anything rush to your mind, John Baer?
Well, just the usual, Marty. I mean, as you know, Pennsylvania's legislative incumbency retention rates are always in the mid to high 90% because they gerrymander the state in a way that almost none of the seats are competitive. I mean, they're in districts, they break them up in districts that are either heavily Democratic or heavily Republican. So it isn't likely, in my view, that there'll be much change in the House. But John Misek is absolutely right that the Senate in the Southeast, there are a couple of seats. You get into the suburbs of Philadelphia, and it's not a given anymore for Republicans down there. So if the Democrats put up some decent challengers, they could get a couple of more seats in the Senate.
Let me get, looks like Dottie from Glenside to join our conversation. And Dottie, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. I have a question about the money that comes back and forth between Philadelphia and Harrisburg. I know we're hearing lots about needing money for schools, and we're lobbying for that. But I'm wondering about how much tax-based money is going to Harrisburg from Philadelphia.
Do you know the answer to that, John Baer?
Well, I did a huge study a few years ago, Marty, and it took forever. And Dottie, it's a great question because that's the kind of thing that we ought to be looking at. I haven't done it in a while. When I did it, it, of course, ran on page 47 of the Daily News. But I can tell you that it was essentially a wash, that the amount of tax revenue that is generated by Philadelphia, its businesses, its people, personal income tax, sales tax, corporate tax, all of that, pretty much balanced out the enormous amount of state resources that go to Philadelphia. And when you get to the big ticket numbers like education, like human services, like welfare, Philadelphia tends to take about a third of the state pie. So in other words, they're also contributing about a third of the state pie when you get to tax revenue. So it's pretty much, at least when I did it several years ago, it was pretty much a wash.
Let me go back to you, John Micek, and even going back to what the governor, he mentioned three cities, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, and Harrisburg, wanting, I guess, to give a bit of a shout out to these urban areas of the state. He also talked about Harrisburg on its way back, a city finally on its way to financial recovery. Harrisburg declared bankruptcy. Is it on the way to financial recovery from your perspective?
Just to clarify, the city never actually declared.
Oh, they didn't?
It was put into Act 47 receivership. There was a great deal of controversy as to whether or not the city would seek a bankruptcy filing, but it never actually did file for bankruptcy. That said, though, Bill Lynch, the former adjutant general of the Pennsylvania National Guard, was appointed the city's financial receiver and came out with a recovery plan at the tail end of last year that called for the long-term leasing of the city's parking meters and its garage assets, the sale of Harrisburg's notorious trash-to-energy incinerator to raise some money to try to get the city back on financial footing. All that has happened, so the city has taken some steps back in the right direction. There is still an immensely long road ahead of it, but it is not now sort of teetering at the brink of absolute ruin as it was just a couple of years ago. Philadelphia and Pittsburgh have their own issues, but Harrisburg now, with a new mayor, Eric Papenfuse, has taken its first steps back toward fiscal stability. But again, it's a long road ahead.
John Baer, the governor talked about natural gas, saying that Pennsylvania was the nation's second largest producer of natural gas. It's a controversial issue in this state. Where does that zoning issue stand? And this is communities having some control over zoning within their borders.
Well, the state Supreme Court, as you know, struck down that portion of Act 13 that would have relieved local communities of the duty, responsibility of keeping an eye on zoning and drillers, basically saying it was unconstitutional that those communities have a right to decide who drills where. That it was a very strongly written opinion, and the administration, the Corbett administration, which is on a string of big legal high-profile losses, is asking the court to reconsider, which is a rare legal move, and I think highly unlikely that they will do so. So that could put a dent in, but the governor sort of made a little makeup call to the gas drilling industry yesterday when he called for new drilling in state lands so long as you did it horizontally. If you go, you don't go down, you go across. If you have drilling rights in lands adjacent to state lands, you can drill down a mile and then go underneath without, you just go sideways and drill. Environmental groups, of course, go crazy over this kind of stuff. Here we go again. We're giving away our state resources. We'll see if it actually. And I think I don't think he needs legislative approval to do this. I think he can do this by executive order. John Micek, is that right?
Yeah, John.
That sounds about right. This will get the state about $75 million in new revenue. The administration is saying. Marie Cusick from your own state impact project, Marty, was reporting on this yesterday. And what's not clear about this non-surface impact drilling, as it's referred to, is whether it includes stuff like compressor stations or the impact of bringing, say, 400 million gallons of water onto these drilling properties. The administration kind of danced its way around that. But Yeah, this is obviously a sop to the drilling industry, and it's something I'm sure they're going to like.
And John Baer, how much do you think drilling, fracking, Marcellus Shale, how much do you think that it will be part of this governor's race? And, of course, the question of a severance tax versus what Governor Corbett has done.
Well, virtually every Democratic candidate, Marty, wants to do more than a severance tax. They want to just flat out tax natural gas on the argument that we're the only big state producer that does not. So it will be central to the argument, and it's a huge issue. I mean, it's not an issue in Philadelphia because Philadelphia doesn't have natural gas. It has its own kind of gas, as you well know.
I knew you were going to say that.
but it is a huge issue in the rural areas, and particularly western and northwestern part of the state. And for many, it's been an economic boon. A lot of those communities have gotten an awful lot of money from the severance tax. Mm. So they don't want a moratorium. They don't want to see the industry taxed out of the business. But the argument, and I think it's a good one, is, look, the gas is here. The companies aren't going to leave if you put a little bit of a tax on them. This is where the gold is. And if they have to pay a little more, it's not like energy companies are going broke. So, I mean, there's a strong argument on both sides, and it will be central to the race.
John Micek, it's interesting that the governor has you know, said he opposes increasing taxes on just about everything, including natural gas. But when you look at transportation, the infrastructure, I guess you could call it a fee, but it certainly looks like increased gas taxes to fix roads and bridges.
Yeah, I mean, the governor very early on was Catholic, small c, in his opposition to tax increases of any kind. But, I mean, some of them have since come to pass, notably this lifting of the cap on the wholesale gasoline tax, which is a tax paid by service stations. You know, we're already sort of seeing some of the impact of that at the pump in the form of higher gas prices. But you know, the administration argued this correctly, that it's very hard to raise $2.5 billion to $3 billion for infrastructure repair and road and bridge reconstruction without making somebody actually pay for it. So that you know they made the argument that the greater economic good in terms of economic competitiveness and public safety outweighed whatever deleterious effect there would be from this. You know, they tried to dance around it and not say it was going to be a tax increase, but the fact of the matter was that it was. And so, too, was this local impact fee that natural gas drillers now pay. That's supposed to cover the public infrastructure cost of drilling. And you heard the governor talk about that yesterday, about how wonderfully well that's performed. And I couldn't help but snicker a little bit because it was pretty clearly sort of a top spin lob back at the severance tax folks. I'm saying, look, we've got this thing already. We don't need your thing. That was another instance where a sort of non-tax increase had also come to pass.
Well, and John Baer, I think anyone that drives on roads in Pennsylvania and takes some of these bridges, they're in terrible shape.
Sure. And, I mean, it was the right thing to do, both from a public policy standpoint and a political standpoint. The last thing you need when you're running for governor is for a bridge to collapse and a school bus to go into a river somewhere.
Sure.
So, the roads were in horrible shape, particularly in western part of the state. And, it creates jobs. It provides infrastructure, which is good for business. It should have been done his first year in office. He mentioned yesterday in his speech that it has been a consistent problem that somehow never got done. Well, I'm thinking somehow. Yeah, nobody provided the leadership to make it happen sooner. It should have been done the first year in office, and we wouldn't be talking about it. He'd be out there cutting ribbons and getting praise for having fixed bridges and roads.
And that's John Baer, who joins us along with John Micek, and we're talking about Pennsylvania politics, talking about the governor's budget address yesterday, and again taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. I'm Marty Moscoen, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY. I want to spend the last couple of minutes talking about the voter ID law. A judge ruled recently, John Micek, that this law was unfair. It was an unreasonable burden for the right to vote. Is the governor going to challenge this law?
Yeah, they already have. If memory serves, they've actually asked for the full Commonwealth Court to reconsider the decision that was handed down by Judge Bernard McGinley a little bit earlier this year. pretty strong language now, funnily enough, by Republican and Democratic judges on the Commonwealth Court, who have said that the law is unworkable in its current form, and it's been stayed for, I think, 3 elections now, because it is so impractical, and that the state has not been able to show that disenfranchisement would not take place, and that it's not been able to show that it would be able to get proper ID into the hands of those who need it. And we have editorialized consistently about this at Penn Live, that the law is little more than a political device altered by Republicans to disenfranchise largely Democratic voters. Republicans have denied that this is the case, but when you look at who would be impacted by this law, it's hard to refute. So it has been something of a relief, at least from our institutional perspective, that this law has not gone into effect.
But what I found, we've done so many shows about this, but to you, John Baer, which is the state never offered one piece of evidence of voter fraud, which is, of course, the reason to have a voter ID law, which is to root out voter fraud. But they didn't have one example of that in making their argument before the court.
Yeah, and that was by stipulation. They stipulated that would not be a part of their argument when the initial trials and hearings began. But look, I mean, John Micek is right. The wording of Judge McGinley's order was really strong. I mean, it's hard to see why the court would reconsider an order that basically says that the purpose of voting laws is to get people to vote, and what McGinley said was that this law, quote, unreasonably burdens the right to vote. How you reconsider that? I mean, I don't know. Does he turn around and say, okay, well, maybe it doesn't? I mean, presumably a lot of time and effort went into this decision. We've been dealing with it for years, as you know. I think politically it's a mistake for the governor to keep this alive because it tends to generate voter turnout rather than retard it. I mean, people, you then go to the constituencies most affected by this and say they don't want you to vote.
Well, it's
and that gins up turnout, in my view.
Well, I always enjoy talking with the two of you, especially about Pennsylvania politics. John Baer, thank you very much.
Marty, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. And John Micek, thank you very much as well.
Thank you, Marty.
You're welcome. John Micek, editor of the editorial and opinion pages for the Patriot News and Penn Live. John Baer, political columnist for the Philadelphia Daily News. His blog, Baer Growls, can be found at philly.com. You can also check us out at Radio Times at WHYY.org. There's a lot there for you to look at and play with. I'm Marty Moscoen. Thank you so much for joining us in this first hour Radio Times. And do stay with us. We'll be right back.